Hello, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, the unfiltered and unmasked podcast about everything autism. Here's your host, Devin Morrissey.
Hi, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic with me, Devin Morrissey. I want to officially welcome you all to this milestone 30th episode of this podcast, and what a ride it has been so far. I will be continuing the conversation of autism in the entertainment industry with a very special guest who, if you haven't heard of her yet, you will definitely know her now. She is an autistic actress and autistic consultant who rose to prominence with Freeform's Everything's Gonna Be Okay, and who is now making her film debut with the powerful film Horse Girls. Please welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, Lillian Carrier. Lillian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Devin.
I've known you for a few years now, and you have been climbing up the ranks. It has been, I think, so exciting to watch how you have just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger throughout the course of the past few years. And I could not be more excited for you with this film debut of Horse Girls. It is powerful. It is raw. It is emotional. It is honest. And I am so excited to talk with you about everything in your life that has led you up to this point. So if you're ready, Lillian, we'll get started. Are you ready?
I'm very ready, yeah.
Perfect. So when I bring on an autistic person onto my podcast, I always like to start with their journey from actually the very beginning. So when were you first diagnosed, Lillian? Like, when did you first find out that you were autistic? And what was your reaction to all of it?
So that was a very long journey. So I wasn't diagnosed until 16.
Really?
Yes. Which late diagnosis on average, but at the time was a pretty early diagnosis for women who didn't, portray their autism in the way the stereotypical type was, right? Like, a lot of women fell through those cracks. And so, yeah, I was misdiagnosed very early on with anxiety and depression. And I was walking through life thinking that that's what I had. And I just, like, this anxious, depressed person. And, like, you know me. Like, those traits, like, just aren't there. I have very little anxiety. And when there is anxiety, it's about, like, real. It's not a disorder. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm a very bubbly, happy person.
Definitely are.
And so it just, like, at a certain point when, like, my friends started understanding what anxiety and depression were, and they knew I had this diagnosis, they were just like, Lillian, I don't understand. They're like, I know you have this disorder. I know it's diagnosed by professionals, but I need to understand how it manifests. And I was like, well, like, I just have more sadness, and there's no cause for it. I just, yeah. And I'm like a really anxious all, and they're like, but we don't see that. Right. So I went on a journey, like, I was talking to my therapist, and she's like, no, this is what you have. Like, these are the examples. And she was going through about, like, how I had struggles with going to, like, big events, and I had struggles with, like, and they were like, you have breakdowns, like, all the time in the middle of things, and then you really struggle sometimes getting out of bed, and, like, these things I went through, and I'm like, yeah, but I'm not when I don't want to get out of bed, it's not because I'm really, really sad.
Yeah,
like, I know I'm not feeling what you describe as sadness. I mean, you told me it was sadness.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's something else. So the experts were actually no help in this, but I started, like, really diving in and, like, looking. I'm like, is there another answer out there? And the book that, like, hit me so hard was, at the time, it was called All Cats Have Asperger's. They've now reissued All Cats Have Autism.
Yes.
And I just, like, was flipping through that book that happened to me in my special education classroom. Hmm. And I was like, me, I experienced that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it led me down. I was researching autism intensely. And I'm like, I think I have this.
Yes.
And yeah, I went home and I talked to Chloe, my twin sister,
Yes.
about it for a little bit. And the two of us were like a little bit discussing the possibility that both of us might have it. And then I finally, yeah, I went to my mom one day after like thorough research and months of going, I feel this is me. And turns out she had actually talked to one of the educational therapists at my school who had also gone to her and gone, I don't think this is what Chloe and Lillian have.
Oh.
And you need to look into autism. And my mom was terrified of approaching me. Because we, again, the stigma, and there was hardly any a representation of like what my autism looked like. Because I knew I wasn't Rayman, right? And I knew I wasn't like that cookie cutter image that they had of like, I didn't have those same struggles. Socializing was very different for me than like, but I didn't, again, when I found out and like we went through the diagnosis process, which I was very lucky to be able to go through, and I got that diagnosis, to me was a relief. It was like, I have an answer for all of my struggles. I have an answer for why I've been on anxiety and depression medication and I felt awful and like nothing was helping and everything I tried made it worse. And this was the answer. And that my struggles were real and that I did have struggles that other people in the world didn't have. But I was going through this life thinking that everyone like didn't understand these social cues and like that lights made them have headaches and that they felt their skin crawl when they wore these certain fabrics, right? And but they didn't. They weren't feeling the physical sensations and pain and then they automatically didn't know things that I didn't know. And like to me it was a weight off. Now it didn't mean like it didn't change my life in any way except that I now had a path to go on and a new options of like how to get the right resources and the right therapies and the right classes and whatnot to help me with those struggles. But I don't think I would have lived my life any differently if I never got the diagnosis. Like I would still be the same Lillian. I'm just really glad I did so that I could get those resources.
Yeah, and it helps you answer that question of what on earth is going on, because I'm so happy you brought that up. We have been told for so many years that autism is supposedly the whole Rain Man thing, where you are fitting the stereotypical mode of what Dustin Hoffman played in the movie. However, what people fail to realize is that it is called a spectrum for a reason. Everyone's autism is different. Everyone gets diagnosed early on or later on in life or even in the mid-between. No autism is the categorized norm. And what I think you've been bringing up is so important is the journey to get a diagnosis. Because first off, not everybody gets diagnosed super early in life. It takes people years to figure that out. And like with you, it takes a lot of soul searching as well, where they're identifying the patterns of what is going on. Like, okay, maybe it's a sensory overload thing, or we're being overstimulated and we're hearing loud sounds, and it's like, oh my God, it's hurting. So I'm so happy that you brought that up, because a lot of people just think that autism is identified by just one simple trait, and that's never the case. So tell me a little bit about your life, because you got diagnosed at 16, both you and your twin sister. What were the next 2 years of your life up to the time you were 18 years old? What was that like?
That was a whole journey of like really I came out immediately, told everyone I was autistic. I didn't think about consequences of disclosing. I was just in a place of like I have an answer. I need to explain it to people. I need because I don't fully know what this means, but like it feels like an answer to so many struggles. And for my friends, like I felt it made the people who were accepting of it so much closer because they finally understood me. I don't know your experience of socializing, but like my whole life, I thought I was just a terrible person. Because I didn't have the label, because I didn't know I struggled. I knew that I tried so hard to get people to like me, to be a good person, to like yes. socialize. And all I did was make people angry and upset and mad.
100%.
And I didn't know why, yeah. and they didn't tell me why. And it just felt like maybe I'm just a terrible person, right? And so having that answer, like, alleviated that feeling and made me feel like I am a good person, but I need to learn these certain skills and these things that other people inherently have to yeah. be able to not do that to people or explain where it's coming from. And so like starting off with just explaining where it's coming from made those people who are willing to work through it explain their side of the story, right? To be like, yes. this is what made me upset, and this is why it made me upset, because of the diagnosis. And to me, I mean, that's a double-edged sword there, but like I felt a lot of feelings of, why did I need this label for people to do that?
Yes.
And so I went through a huge like discomfort in that, and like, is this label actually helping me? It, or is it causing a different judgment and a different thing of like, are they now seeing me as less than? So I went through a whole journey of that to come out, but I did come out the other side going like, I think for me personally, disclosing is the way I wanted to go, because it did help me with having really close friends and being able to keep them. And I felt that, sorry, it's just, it's hard to articulate these feelings because it's like deep feelings. And I don't know how many people experience this outside yeah. of us. And like, we all have very personal stories through it, but it felt like it was important to at least try in my circle to change that stigma. And if they didn't, they weren't worthy of being in my life, is how I felt at the time, for sure. I think I've gone a little grown since then to be like, that doesn't mean they're not worthy of being in my life, but I think it's worthy of trying and getting them to like start seeing the journey, right? Of getting to a better place and seeing what it is. Because just because it doesn't work the time I tell them, hopefully like they then see a TV show, read a book, meet another person, and it grows, yeah. right? And maybe they come back around and like, we can be friends then, right? Because the journey of autism and disability is so complicated. And
it is beyond yeah, complicated.
Having harsh judgments of people. I don't think anyone, okay, but there are extremes, but like for the most part, I don't think anyone's a bad person and outwardly trying to harm. There's good intentions, and there's, but some good, like they're trying so hard to be good, but sometimes harm happens.
Yeah, and it's unintentional, right? Most of the
it's
time.
It's unintentional, and that's something I always have to go back to. But yeah, so I don't know how comfortable you are having this on the podcast, but I
went
through ABA, and I am very anti-ABA.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my experience and because of all the research I've done and the people I've talked to experienced it around the same time as me. I hear all the time that it's changed, but during the time I went through it, they told me it's changed. I think if we're going to continue whatever the changed version is, it needs a new name. I think mm-hmm. ABA, from where it started and how I experienced it, is an awful thing. And I don't know if we don't need to go into detail, but I went through a huge regression of skills, a regression, like I lost the ability to speak. I almost failed out of school. Like ABA harmed me so much. I think I'm grateful for the experience of yeah. it, to know what ABA is and to have first person experience. But I can't imagine going through it like 5 years old or younger when you don't have a voice. Because mm-hmm. at 16, I could say, what the fuck is going on? And I could walk out of the room. I had an ability, like they couldn't physically keep me in the room and force me to do things. But at 5 years old, if you throw a tantrum, if you do, like there's just, and sometimes you can't some voice. They're the things that I could say. I'm like, I don't know why you would want me to do that. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
They would be like, you can't say that. I'm like, why not? Right.
It's definitely interesting.
So I went through that, and then but at 16, it's a weird age of like,
yeah,
there aren't a lot of resources if you didn't start at 5 years old.
Yep.
Right.
There's not a lot.
They're like, I don't know what to do with you because we didn't start at a young age and you're supposed to go through all these steps, but we can't start you as a 5 year old. So I like every program I went to, I didn't fit into the box because it was 16. And then the ableism or superior, I don't know what to call it, of so many programs denied me because of the way I appear.
Yes.
And can socialize like this. They went, you were misdiagnosed. There's no possible way you're autistic. We're not going to support you. What? And they're like, if you are, like, it's so minimal that there's nothing. This program won't help you. That blew my mind that every program was denying me for that stuff.
I will say this. You are so brave being so open and honest about your diagnosis straight off the bat. I know that from my personal experience, it took me years to fully come into my own. I was diagnosed autistic at 3. Found out that I was autistic at the age of 12 from my parents. They try to give me normal life as much as possible, and I'm so appreciative for that. But as a result of that, I really struggled in the public school system, just trying to fit in, figure out where I belong, because everybody's autism is differently. And I felt like I was not autistic enough for the autism community, and I was not neurotypical enough for the neurotypical community. And I think everybody's autism puts them in some place on the spectrum, but it doesn't make anybody less or better than. It just means we're able to at least share our stories and at least open up, because that's the beauty of the autism world right now, is that autistic voices are actually being amplified and we're opening up more about our experience and actually talking about it, you know. And especially in ABA, it's a very controversial thing right now just because there's so many opinions. I appreciate you actually opening up about your story, because it actually shows that not every person's experience with ABA was not positive. And that is actually okay, because we talk about things, about how we can make things better for other people so that they don't have to go through the things that you went through. So I think what you're saying is actually super important and really shows off a powerful message. So moving on to my next question, you are an actress and an autism consultant, and you've actually been working in the entertainment industry pretty hard for the last few years. What got you started in wanting to pursue a career in the entertainment industry?
I mean, this is gonna sound terrible, but it was never a plan, never a goal, never wanted to do that, actually.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy about it now. I'm not gonna complain. Like, I'm grateful. It was not my dream. I'm living a very happy dream. Like, I'm not gonna say it's just a job. No, it's incredible that I get to do this. Like, little Lillian was not dreaming of being an actress. But so this was, again, the not being diagnosed and not having answers to why socializing was so hard for me and why I didn't get things. When I asked questions, and I don't know if you experienced the same thing, that in the moment, when you make someone angry or sad and you ask them why, you're asking why they make that face, they just get insulted. Yeah. Rather than, and there's no, they can't help you. They don't help you. During the summer camp, there was a portion of the summer camp that was theater. And I found theater was a great place where I could ask all those questions of why people do things, why they respond that way, how to make facial expressions and body language, how to read it. And I used that as an outlet to learn that before I got my diagnosis of autism and went, oh, that's what I was doing. Right?
Yeah.
I think it was four or five, my very first class. And like that became like my favorite thing to do it was a tool. I mean, I loved it as well. Like, I can make friends there. Like, I love being on stage. I love telling stories. It was so cool. But that was my main resource for being able to have any sort of social skills and interact with people, was theater. So when I thought about like making it as a career, Again, the world was so different. I have multiple other disabilities, and navigating like the public eye and dealing with agents and managers and contracts and like all that other stuff, I was just like, eh. I mostly did stage at the time, and I did not want to go to New York. I went to New York very young, and like sensory overload. I can't handle that city.
It is crazy up in New York. I don't know how people, especially autistic people, do it.
I got into film starting around middle school. So a lot of the way, and I think it's very common among autistic people, the way things are assigned in school is not really the way our brain works. And I was doing all these assignments and getting them wrong and failing miserably. And I diagnosed with anxiety and depression. I was like, maybe I'm just like not good with like being in front of people and giving speeches and like doing all. So anytime I was given an assignment, I went to the teacher, and Chloe did this too. And I was like, I have a learning disability. I have struggles with this. Can I do the assignment in a video? And I filmed skits and I did these like fun scripts and like turned everything into like these cool videos, which, you know, was like acting and doing these skills. Chloe did a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and like we worked together on projects. Awesome. And like I did that with friends as well. And yeah, I was so glad I was at a school that let me do that. And yeah, so I gained that film skill. But again, like I had no idea how to navigate that industry, and to get into any of that was not. So I went to school for biology, and I was going to become a scientist. And that was my dream. And that was, yeah, that was what I was going for. I started autism. I didn't know if that was going to go anywhere. That was like my secondary dream, which started off as like, I was just telling my story and people resonated with it, because I couldn't find, and I was diagnosed, so like I couldn't find resources for me. I started like sort of building my own in my own way, and people who were in a similar situation was like, what you're doing is working, please tell me how to do it. And so I started having one-on-one meetings, telling my story and like explaining the resources of like how I was doing what I was doing, and then it sort of turned into autism.
Yes, I remember that. That's how I one of the reasons I actually first met you was through autism.
So I was doing that, and I was doing college and autism, and my job coach at my school came to me, was like, Lillian, I know that you've not mentioned any interest in this, but I know you're autistic, and I know you did theater in your youth. There is this TV show that's looking for an autistic actress. Do you have any interest? And I said no. I went home, and Chloe found the flyer I was handed, and she was like, you're doing this? And I said no. She's like, what's wrong with you? And she showed my mom, and my mom was like, you're doing this.
So, I just love how Chloe is putting you on the spot, be like, you are not doing this. Get your butt to the studio right now. Like, so, what are you talking about?
Yeah, Chloe, who was in film school at the time, filmed my audition and sent it in. And yeah, it was like 2 days later, I got a call back. And then a week later, I was reading for Network. And that was that.
I mean, it's amazing of just how you were able to film your projects for a biology class and major. How you end up in this career where you are now, it's pretty insane of just how the stars just align. Which is
they really
mind-boggling.
Because I don't know what was wrong with me. I was so in denial. Like, to the point that I was like, we film in the summer. So I will go to college. I will film in the summer. And then once the show's over, it's going to be a cool story. And I will be a biologist. And then we finish filming season one. It hadn't come out yet, and I got an email from Warner Brothers casting, and they're like, we're gonna film a movie starring an autistic character, and we heard about you. I'm like, how did you hear about me? What? And they're like, yeah, I don't know if you heard of the book, the play, The Curious Case of the Dog in the Nighttime.
I have heard of it, yes.
Yeah. So that's what the movie was supposed to be. I auditioned for that. I knew it was a long shot because that is a man. The character is a man. Yeah. But they pinned me and they said, if any of production wants to change it to a girl, like, you're pinned as the possible lead. The movie didn't end up happening, but the casting people came to talk to me and they're like, you didn't even have a headshot. Like, what's going on? Because you filmed the whole show. And I was like, well, I'm not an actress and I'm not planning on being an actress. They're like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You're going to be an actress? I don't know. And so they started, like, working with me and have been a mentor since. And been like, you need to do this. I don't know why you're not. And that was my wake-up moment. And that's, to me, insane that a casting department was like, hold on.
That is absolutely amazing how, honestly, life just has this weird way of working things out. And it's been pretty interesting to hear how it all really came to be, just because acting was not on the cards for you, like you said. But the fact that your sister said, you know what, you are going to that audition. Had you not gone to that audition, I guarantee you things would have been incredibly different. So I actually want to take you to a part of the most recent years, which is COVID. Now, while I was in COVID, I actually had the chance to watch a certain show that you were on. You came into mainstream prominence in 2020 with the hit Freeform show, Everything Is Gonna Be Okay. It ran for 2 seasons. I respectfully declined that decision that they made. And on the show, you played Drea, Matilda's autistic asexual girlfriend and eventual wife on both seasons. What was it like to get your first major recurring role on TV? And in what ways did you feel like you were similar or different to Drea?
So, I mean, it was the most incredible thing. I auditioned for Matilda, and Drea didn't exist at the time. I auditioned with the writer showrunner, and he sat down with me, and we had a little talk after they decided not to go with me as Matilda. He was like, I was just thinking, and like, I got to know you and I got to know Luke because we had like a whole producer session where we hung out for like a whole weekend. And he was like, I want to create a character based around you. And so that's how Drea came to me. I mean, there's a lot of differences, but like her autism specifically was based around my experience of autism. And he really liked me talking about how like I tried so hard to like be nice and be a good person, but like I had that honesty issue that a lot of autistic people have. But I've now come to like pretty skillful at being honest and saying pretty harsh things, but it coming across in like a positive, good way. And we wanted to stick that, like he was like, that's gonna be the core of Drea, that she says these insulting, should be insulting things, very honest, but it's gonna come across in like this beautiful light of, in showing autism, of how like, this is what they're trying to say. And I think he did a really good job of that, because like, yeah, when we filmed the show, I don't think anyone thought of her as rude or a jerk, but she said, if you actually break down what she said, she's saying cruel things, brutally honest.
Yeah,
like
she definitely was, from what I remember watching.
Yeah. And then all of the like sensory stuff and all the things that were brought in around there, and he brought in my Crohn's disease, and yeah, he brought in my service dog. That was my real service dog that I auditioned with. So yes, I relate very heavily to her and her experiences of autism. But yeah, I was a very different person in high school. I was not her. I did not have a girlfriend. I would not have gotten married so young. Like, there's choices that were definitely for the show. Right? Out of all the characters I've played, she's the closest to me that there is. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so cool because obviously at that time when COVID hit, we were all on lockdown and we could not go anywhere. And I vividly remember watching it on TV, primarily just because, one, it's an autistic show and I relate to that, too. I had heard that there were actually autistic actors on there. And don't get me wrong, I love any any show that revolves around autism. Like, I do. But over the years, it's been kind of disheartening to see that there's been a lack of actually autistic actors playing these roles. So when I first started watching the first episode, I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this is so nice to be able to relate to some of this stuff, because the cues, the trying to fit in high school, the social norms, all that, it was just like, oh my gosh, I can relate with this. And it was so exciting to see that it was not just one autistic cast member, but it was several. And that's what I think is so cool. And what I thought Everything Is Gonna Be Okay did a great job with is actually showing that we need different accommodations. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like, you have your guide dog on the show. That, to me, is so important. And it's also coming from a very authentic place. And speaking of the show, in addition to your role as Drea, you also actually worked as the autism consultant on set for Everything's Gonna Be Okay while acting in your recurring role, which I still don't know to this day how you did it, but it is outstanding. What led you to also become a consultant on the show, and how were you able to balance both roles at the same time?
So again, it started off with Drea was being created around me. So I was working close with the writers on getting that autism right and as close to my experience as possible. But while doing that, I was reading the script and seeing the other stuff in there, and as well as when I auditioned for the pilot, because it was like wasn't my dream to be an actress and I didn't care so much, I straight up said there are boundaries and there are things I'm not willing to do, things I'm not willing to be associated with. And I told them, you write this out or I'm not being part of the show. Yeah. And I stood firm on that when we continued doing the series as I was Drea. And that sort of turned into like me giving notes every time I got a script. As I went through, like the different departments started like finding out about, like, I did have an expertise because I did autism, because I did study so much about autism at the time. I was working very closely with some of the big experts in the field who were doing studies. So I did have this excess knowledge. Specifically, props was reaching out all the time about like, what is popular tools that like, or things that just like isn't in the script in any way, but like you just would have in Matilda's room, that you would just have in the classroom, that is just like daily life stuff that no one thinks about. And my big feeling about using autism consultants, while yes, like there are experts like therapists that like know so much about autism, a lived experience is so different. They're seeing the struggles and the worst parts and like all that stuff, but they're not seeing, you know, sometimes like I don't like the sound of flushing in the bathroom, so I have a thing so I can flush it when I leave, right? Exactly. It's, there's just things that certain people experience, right? They're like, I have a reminder note on the fridge, like that tells me to make sure that all the appliances are turned off because I forget.
Yes. It's those like, accommodations that you need.
Like, yes, a therapist can say they might forget to do that, but what do we each individually do in our own experience? And we're, every single one of us is different, right? So having someone like me who both can share my lived experience as well as like I work with so many different autistic people and like they share their struggles and their stories and their things, and I give them the tools. It's a great person to go to. And I think the best you could do is to find someone with lived experience and ask them, what do they do? What would they have in their house? And use that in those situations. And so, yeah, that's what I did. And I was very happy to do that, especially like having Drea based on me. After the first season, because I did all that, I asked if that could be a credit I have. And they're like, yeah, of course, because you did all that work. And then going into season two, like I had that initial credit. And then I reached out to like all the departments and like a bunch of them like were constantly emailing me. I could manage both roles pretty well. But most of that was like in pre-production, and like there were things I caught the day of, I wasn't there to make sure like people's needs were met or anything. That was a very which I've now have like I on Horse Girls, and I've hired Chloe to be my, I've labeled it autism sensitivity coordinator. So my feeling with consultant is that something that can be ignored, right? You get an expert in something, but just because they have an expertise, you can be like, but this for the story, I'm just not going to do that. I think with autism sensitivity coordinator, you can say, that's ableist, that's problematic, that's, and that's something like, this is something you cannot have, right? It's a very different label and a very different reason that they're there on set.
Yes.
And I think that there's important to have a distinction, whether or not you give someone both roles. Mm-hmm. I think that it makes a world of a difference to have a label like that where you're like, no, you're not being sensitive to the autistic people.
I can 100% agree with you on that. I think what you mentioned earlier about the lived experiences is so important, because for so many years, people don't, you know, people want to make all these projects about us, but yet they don't really include our input, and they don't include our actual experiences that we go through on a regular basis. And so the fact that you were actually on set advocating, be like, hey, this is what is actually the real life situation of a regular autistic person, is so important. And this is for any person on the spectrum. In fact, I think moving forward, a lot of studios, especially these big billion-dollar studios, can really benefit from autism consultants. And it's not in a bad way. It's to help educate the public more about what autistic people need from society on a regular basis. So the fact that you've been able to do that for that entire second season of Everything's Gonna Be Okay is absolutely amazing. Now, I know that the last few months have been very busy for you and also quite exciting, as you are starring in your film debut with the new movie Horse Girls. You play a young autistic woman named Margarita, a horse enthusiast who wants to pursue her passion of hobby horse gymnastics while also dealing with life issues, including finding employment and having her mother deal with medical issues. Could you go a little bit more in depth about this new movie, what it's about, and how it's prevalent to the autism community?
Yeah. So, Horse Girls, I'm so excited for this story to be told. First of all, it's just a good watch. You're gonna like have a really fun experience. It's gonna break your heart. It's gonna make you laugh, and you're gonna leave with a like warm feeling at the end. And the prevalence of the autism, for me reading it, there are so few stories of the young adult autistic experience. There's so much about childhood, although I still think we need to do better because a lot of it's from the parents' perspective. There's so much about teenagers, and then there's still a bit about like that after adulthood, like when, but a lot of it is it featured romance, right? There's a lot about romance out there, of which Love on the Spectrum, you've been on. Love that representation. It needs to be out there. But this story, I just feel like finding your footing as a disabled adult is a story that isn't really told. Like there's and there's the inspiration porn stories, which like that's a whole other thing, and then there's like the devastating tragedy of like the person who loses a limb and then like can't function and like wants to kill themselves, and then like why is that story told? But this one is just that reaching that adulthood and going, I can't go the normal path. Everyone wants me to move out, get a job, and just live this same path that like everyone's supposed to go on. But I don't think I'm ever going to be capable of doing that. And that knowing, having a story where someone isn't capable of that, gets the support they need, and is still seen as a full-fledged adult. I was so excited to tell a story like that. And I think that's so important for both autism and the wider disability community to have stories like this. And I mean, there's so many other layers to it, to this story, but that that part was the part that hit me, and I wanted, like, was beautiful and so good.
You know? Yes. I was watching the trailer a few days ago, and I have to tell you, I got chills just from watching that, because you're seeing a lot of things in this. You're seeing quite a bit of happiness, quite a lot of sadness, and even some heartbreak that goes with it. But that is also the autistic story. And it's interesting because through our own personal experiences with being on TV or being in, you know, the autistic limelight, it's different for everybody. And I think that what we could do better as a society is showing that autism is not just always a happy thing, but there's also actual life struggles that are coming with it. For instance, having to live on our own. It is not always easy at first, even though we get the hang of it. Sometimes we forget things, or trying to find a job right now. It is not the greatest environment to find a job right now with the current job market, but people are still looking. And so what is so insane about Horse Girls is that it is literally putting everything together and showing, you know what, this is what an autistic life for an actual adult is like. Because autism doesn't just go to 18 years old, it goes for the rest of our lives. And showing that in this movie is super, super, super incredible. Now, I have to say, I have been reading the reviews. Horse Girls has been receiving rave critical reviews, and it actually premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York City last summer. You're now headed back to New York City in just a couple of weeks to showcase Horse Girls at the Real Abilities Film Festival alongside Once More Like Rain Man with Bella Zoe Martinez. What are you hoping that moviegoers will take away from seeing Horse Girls? Because I think just the trailer in itself, it really shows that we are in for quite the wild ride.
So, I have the opinion that you don't have to take anything away from seeing movies or TV shows. Like, as long as you get joy and, like, a moment away from, like, whatever troubles you have and can go into a different story, a different world, I think that's what they're for. But if you are going to take anything away, I hope it's to see people who are a little different from you in a different light. And I think for those who are not on the spectrum, to just like see into our world for a moment, because this story is told from the autistic perspective, which is very rare to happen.
Very, very rare.
I think most of our stories are told from the outside our perspective and going, look, they're a little weird and different. Where this one, I love the way it's told from her perspective. So I hope, yeah, that they come out and they see us a little bit different, a little bit more accepting. Autistic people, I just hope it's like you get to see yourself. You get to feel like you're not alone. Like, this is a story worth telling. We are a story worth telling. I think this is a story that's been told 1,000 times in a million different ways, but it's never been told with this sort of character, right? And I think showing that you can place us in any sort of story and we can hold our own and be worthy of a story being told like that, I think that's also, I mean, there's so many things that you can take away. I hope parents feel some sort of relief and safety in that their children will be okay if one day they're not around to give that support, because I think that is, for so many parents of disabled people, their worst nightmare is like, what happens when I'm not here? And I think this story shows that, like, sometimes that support that comes after is not perfect, and there is no possible way to have perfect support, but the world will find a way to take care of your children. If you've done your job, it will be okay. So I hope those are the type of things they take away, but also just enjoy the movie. Just go in and, like any other movie, whatever you take away, because everyone takes something different.
Right? Yeah. I just got goosebumps from your answer. Let me tell you right now. I just got like major goosebumps hearing that. But you're so right though, because the autistic world is a lot more complex than how people perceive it to be, you know. And it's interesting because a lot of people have this assumption that autistic people are, oh, well, they're going to be well taken care of. There's, you know, they have nothing to worry about. That is never the case. And that has never, ever been the case. And what I think is so powerful about this film that is coming out is that it's really going to exude such a lot of joy and a lot of real life emotions that autistic people go through, and actually real life scenarios that autistic people go through on an everyday basis. And honestly, I could not be more excited for you with this film, and especially since you're headed back to New York to premiere this. I think this is going to be such a major big step for you in what is to come. So my last question for you, Lillian, is this. Even though the entertainment industry is trying to open its doors to neurodiverse and autistic talent, let's face it, there is still a long way to go. What do you wish to say to the entertainment industry in terms of being more inclusive? And what are tips or pieces of advice you have for other aspiring autistic actors, singers, or even performers who want to break into this industry?
Well, first off, I think with the projects I've been a part of that have been authentically cast and have had autistic people in the writer's room, on set, behind the camera in some way, I think it's enhanced and made it the stories better. It's authenticity is not the same as good, I will say. That is a different thing.
Two different things.
But having authenticity, there's something that's brought out that I don't think you can capture if you're using someone who has never had the experience. I think with any sort of identity, there's always nuances that you won't be able to see or understand unless you've lived. And having someone on that set to call those moments out, to say, this is not how it would be. And to just throw in, as I said, those like little things that I was able to throw in because I lived it that have nothing to do with the actual script, but are just like, no, but this is how it would be in my real life. Like, I wouldn't just move on, even though the script says it. There would be this moment of like, this would cause a sensory reaction, and then I'd respond, right? This would cause whatever, like I'd have a delay in processing. Like I'd hear it and I'd need a moment to process before I could like give my reaction. I was like, I think I need a fidget toy. This is giving me too many emotions in this moment. Just give me a fidget toy and I can do the scene. Like there's just things that like, yes, you can fake, but like, and you can have something that's still a really good story. There's been actors that have been incredible and done an amazing job of portraying autism that I love those characters. I love the way the actors did it. But there's just those like small nuances that you can't ever say with an autistic actor that like, no, an autistic person wouldn't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
There is an autistic person who would because someone did. Right.
Exactly. And also about the fidget toys, are only like what, $10, $15? They're that cheap. Like, come on.
Oh, they're so cheap. And that's also my feeling. Like, having someone disabled and getting our needs met, and there's this fear that it's so expensive. And it's not. Accommodations are just so much easier than you think they're going to be.
Yes.
And many of us will bring a lot of our own accommodations to the set because we have to in our real life, right? But those of us that may not request, if you're doing an intimacy scene, you have to bring in on an intimacy coordinator. If you're hiring an animal, you have to bring on someone from Humane Society. Like, there's things that are in place for all these other, like, why does an animal get this sort of support and an advocate on set, and disabled people don't? Like, there's levels to it, and I'm not saying that necessarily you have to, but I think it brings something to like your set, and that you could say, we brought on someone to make sure that our actors and our autistic and our disabled people on set were comfortable, right? And I think that's an important thing to do in life. And I hope, like, it's not just the entertainment industry. I hope that, like, by doing these sort of projects, you can see, I did this. So if you work at a grocery store, please hire us. If you work at a bank, please hire us. If you, like, if you work at a, I don't know, wherever, but, like, as a library, hire us. We should be able to have jobs, and our unemployment rate is insane. And we are qualified for every job.
85% of us autistic folks are unemployed. And I'm so happy that you brought that up, because this is creating meaningful opportunities. And yes, even though there are some small steps, we could be even bigger further along those steps. So I'm so happy that you brought that up.
Yeah. And going back to, if you want to tell our stories and you want to make money off of us, why not include us?
Listen to our input.
You want to tell a story about an autistic person, but you don't want an autistic person involved. What does that say?
Like, a lot.
I feel like that becomes some sort of ableism there to say, I want to tell your story for you.
Yeah.
Right?
It does.
We should, if you're telling someone's story, they should be part of that story.
I can't say it enough. You are a star that is literally on the rise right now. It is so exciting to see how much you are contributing to this industry and to this profession, because a lot of people have wanted to get into it for so long, but they don't necessarily have the door open for them. And what you've been able to do is kick that door down so that others behind you can walk through. And what you're doing with Horse Girls and what you're doing with your continuous autism advocacy is so special. And I'm so excited to see how Horse Girls continues to go and what the success that it has. My thanks to Lillian Carrier on this very impactful and very important conversation about autism in the entertainment industry. If you like what you heard on this episode and want to hear episodes or stay tuned for future episodes, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to this podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm Devin Morrissey, and I'll see you next time right here on Autistically Unapologetic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Autistically Unapologetic with Devin Morrissey. If you like what you hear and you want to see more, don't forget to rate and subscribe to stay tuned for future episodes. Again, thanks for listening.